All right, we're beginning here at the beginning of Masechet Muran. As we always do, we're going to give a little introduction to the Masechta. The psukim that we're dealing with are psukim that we're familiar with because the psukim are in Perek Chav Zayin and Vayikra, the psukim that have been driving us throughout Masechet Arachin. And there it mentions in two places the restriction against Tmura. And Tmura is the attempt by an individual to exchange the Kedusha from a particular Kodshei Mizbeach onto another animal, to transfer that Kedusha and say that instead of it being on this particular animal, I want it to be on another animal. And the Sukkim tell us, with regards to a person who is Makdish, Ebeim on the Mizbeach, Kedushat Guf, Lo Yachlifenu, Velo Amiroto, Tov Bira, O Rabito. So there is a restriction against exchanging it both good for bad, bad for good. The Gemara later on will tell us that bad and good refer to Tamim and Balmum. So it's not only true with regards to a transference of Kedusha from better quality, higher price to lower price and vice versa, but it's even from a Tamim to a Balmum or a Balmum to a Tamim doesn't work. But Im Hamer Yamir, if you do it, Be'ema bi-be'ema, an animal to an animal, Ba'yahu utmurato yakodesh. And both the original animal, the source of the Kedusha, as well as the new animal are Kodesh, and we'll see in Masechet Tmura, that the new animal in many cases can end up on the Mizbeach, that both of them are Korbanot and both can end up on the Mizbeach. Now, there is another pasuk later on in that same parak with regards to Meiser Be'ema, where it says, Lo yivaker ben tov v'ra, v'lo yemirenu, v'amer yemirenu v'yahu, t'murato yekodesh lo yigael. So it's mentioned twice, once by Meiser Be'ema, once early on in the Parshia. Now, there are two basic issues with regards to the lav that have to be addressed. The Gemara will address them. One of which is the fact that it is a lav that goes through amira. It's something that's done through speaking verbally. It's an oral violation. It is not something where you do any maisa. There's no action over here. And generally, when we don't have any maisa, we say it's a lav shein bo maisa, and therefore ein lokin alav. That is not true of tmura. Tmura you do get malkot for. We're going to see that very early on over here in the Masechta, that you get malkot for it. It's one of the exceptions to the rule. And that is that there are certain lavim, even though they're a lav she'in bo maaseh, nevertheless you get the malkot for them. And that includes certain very high-level violations or stringent violations, including nishba'ah, memir, and mikalel. So all of those have a, even though they're a lav she'in bo maaseh and only have an amira, they still have a violation that includes a lav. And therefore, many of the rishonim and the mefarshei mikra point out that tmura is a pretty serious violation because it's categorized together with nishba, the sheker, or taking a shvua b'shem Hashem, and mikalel, it's chevero b'shem. So the fact that it's mentioned together with these other items shows you that it carries a certain amount of heft to it in terms of its violation. That's number one. The second thing is, and this is mentioned by the Gemara of Mandaf Dalid, is that it is what's called a lav hanitak liase. Over here, when you have a violation, and then further violation, you have a way to rectify the violation. So the classic examples are, for instance, notar, where it says, lo totiri menu ad boker. You're not supposed to leave it over until the morning. If you do leave it over until the morning, then you have to burn it. So the Torah gives you the way to rectify the problem, and therefore there's no malkot for lav anitak liaseh. Over here, it's seemingly there is a lav anitak liaseh as well, which is lo yivaker ben tov dara, v'lo yimirenu. But im hamer yemiren, if you do it, v'yahu t'murato yekodesh lo yigael, or the other pasuk is yekodesh, so that they are mikudash, that there is an outcome to this, there is an assay, which seems to me that it is kodesh, you treat it like kodesh, and you put it on the mizbeach. So it seems to be a lav hanitak the assay. The Gemara says about that that it's not the case, because there's actually two lavin involved here. There's lo yachlifenu, v'lo yamiroto. Since there are two lavin, the assay cannot rectify two lavin. And an assay can rectify one lav, can rectify two lavin, and therefore there is no lav anitak the assay here. Given that, you will get malkot for it. We're going to see in the beginning of the Gemara here, Tosafot even thinks might have to get two sets of malkot here, 80 malkot rather than 40 malkot, because there are two lavin when you violate the issue of tmura. Now the question as to what the issue is with regards to hamara, because why is it that the Torah restricts doing such a thing? So the Rambam in Hilchot Tmura, Perek Dalet, Halacha Yud Gimel, writes, again, this is a book of Halacha, And he writes something that's true in general, and we've noted this many times from the Rambam. The Ramban has a similar view. He says, even though all the things that the Torah tells us, all the laws they prescribe are chukot, they are laws and they don't have to have any reason to them. It's still worthwhile to look into them. And whatever you can give a reason to, let's give a reason to. And the Chachamim Rishonim say that Melech Shlomo understood Rov HaTamim Shel Kol Chukei HaTorah. He says, therefore, I want to try to explain to you what the issue is with regards to two mitzvot over here that are found in Perek Chav Zayin. One is the fact that an owner of an item, when he redeems it, has to add on an additional fifth in the redemption price. And the other one is Vayahu Utmarato Yekodesh. So the Rambam says, let me explain to you, or let me make you understand why it is that the Torah has these requirements. And he says that a person in general has an affinity towards his assets and towards his possessions, and he wants to enrich himself, he wants to preserve his possessions, he wants to, at the expense maybe of others, sometimes even maybe at the expense of God, he wants to make sure that his money stays with him. And therefore a person will have a tendency, when it comes to, for instance, redeeming things from Hekdesh, to have a tendency to undervalue the item, because they'll say, well, whatever I'm going to have to pay now, I'm giving to Hekdesh anyway, look, I'm doing a good thing, and why should I overvalue it and overassess it? I'm going to underassess it. So the Torah's prescription to offset that type of behavior is to say that any owner adds on a fifth to their valuation. Since their valuation is likely to be more conservative, to be on the lower end, we add a fifth on top of that to bring it up to the market value, or to ensure that that valuation is the true valuation of the item that he is redeeming. That's the reasoning behind that. And then he says, Vayahu Tmurato Yekodesh, is the reason being that we are worried about a person, again, doing something for his own benefit. Because if you give a person reshut to take something that's bad and put it with good, he's going to end up taking something that's good and putting it with bad and say that it's good. Chizkuni says the same sort of thing, just in a more generic sense. He says, you really don't even know what's good and bad. Sometimes there are hidden problems in animals that you can't identify. So you think you're upgrading it. Meantime, it turns out to be a downgrade because you don't even know some of the information about the other animal. So the Chizkuni says it more from a generic sense that you never know which is good and bad, and therefore you can't make the exchange. But Rambam says that maybe we should allow from bad to good or an upgrade. But if we allow people to upgrade, then they'll end up downgrading. And that's because people are biased, subjective, and they'll claim it's an upgrade. They'll claim that it's a better animal, it's a better thing. But they're just really doing it in order to protect their assets, to make sure that they keep the good thing, or they have some sort of regrets about being makdish the item. And so therefore they're going to exchange it onto something of lesser value or something that's not really as good as what they have now. And therefore the Torah is kones this person if he tries to make such an exchange that the individual not only has the animal on hand that is kadosh, now the other item is kadosh, so he loses double. So the value in trying to exchange it is totally lost, and he is now ends up with more kodesh or hekdesh on his hands than he wanted before, and he doesn't accomplish what he really wanted, which was to preserve his assets. Here he loses even more assets by doing this. He says, b'chol elo dvarim k'dei l'kofet yitzro l'taken de'otav. And the whole purpose of this is to get a person to have proper thoughts, morals, and to fix his character traits and the way that he behaves. The majority of the halachot in the Torah are for that purpose. They're a way to create better people. They're a way for us to act better and to have better thoughts and better character traits. And that's what the Rambam says is the reasoning. In all likelihood, anybody would have given that reason as to what the problem with Tmura is that we are worried that people are subjective about these things. They are self-serving with these things. And it's too risky to allow people to make exchanges between animals because there is a high likelihood that it will turn out to be to the detriment of Hekdesh and the benefit of the owner. Therefore, we prevent that completely. And in addition to that, we penalize the person who tries to do it in order to prevent them from doing such. Now, the Sefer Achinuch, in discussing these mitzvot, also mentions, again, what the purpose of this mitzvah is. He discusses the issue of the lav, the fact that you get malkot for it, why it's not called the lav nitak le'aseh. And he says, in addition to this, some of the mifarshim say that mishum ma'aseh nafik mei basof, The fact that in the end, Kagon Hadamemir, Shabeiman Asid Kodesh Bidibro, Venehne Mimena Ma'alba. So that when a person does this, and he's Memir the Behema, in order to make something else Kadosh with it, then he has done something wrong to the original animal, and that's why he gets Malkot here, even though there's not a Maisa, because in the end there is a result. Even though he didn't do any action, his wording actually creates new Kedusha, and there's a physical, quote-unquote, result to his action, which is the fact that the other Behema now is Kadosh. And then in speaking to the Shorshei HaMitzvah, he says, Latil Mora B'lei B'nei Adam B'chol Inyei Kodesh. It's to make people more afraid and careful about issues with regards to Kodesh. And that people will not just take Kedusha or Hekdesh in a willy-nilly fashion to move it around and say, oh, I don't want it on here, I'll move it over here. I could just speak here and I'll move it and I can think about this and do this. We want people to know that there's real impact. When they make something Kodesh, it really has impact. It's a permanent state. It's not something that you can change, not something that you can unwind. We do have Heterim, we do have Atarat Nidarim. But in a willy-nilly fashion, and to prevent that, we have this concept by Tmura that things remain Kodesh, and we want people to understand that there is a certain amount of Dusha to when you make something Hekdesh, and it's not something that you just take lightly. You have to treat it with the proper respect and reverence. So that's all with regards to the Rishonim and the reasons behind Tmura. What's very interesting is a question that's raised by Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, with regards to the problem of Tmura vis-a-vis Pidyon. He points out that in the same Parshiyah, in Perachav Zayin, you have a whole bunch of items that require Pidyon, that require redemption, and then you have Tmura. And he says, what's the difference? Why is it that Pidyon, you can redeem Hekdesh, you're allowed to move Hekdesh and transfer the Kedusha from an animal onto monies, from one animal onto another animal, and you can end up with no problem, and it works. And then you have Tmura, and it doesn't work. He says, you could take an animal, stand it up next to another animal. The animal that has a mum in it was Kodesh Mizbeach. I'd say that this animal now, the Kedusha that's on this Ola, is now put onto the animal next to it. And that's a fine transference of Kedusha. And you won't be in violation of Tmura. He says, please help me understand what's the difference between Pidyon, redemption, and Tmura. Why is one restricted and one is not? What is the fundamental difference between them? He makes a claim here, which is very interesting, that the difference is what the subject of your action is. He says that the difference between Tmura and a Pidyon is that in the case of Pidyon, the subject is the Behema HaKdosha, the animal that has the Kedusha on it, and there you're transferring the Kedusha from the item that has the Kedusha onto the other object, which is the Chulin object, or the one that you want to transfer the Kedusha on. On the other hand, when it comes to Tmura, it's the other way around. The animal that is Chulin is the subject of your Tmura, which is that you want to say, Harizu Tachadzu, that this animal that's Chulin now is going to step into the shoes of that which was Kadosh. So he says that's the key difference between Pidyon and Tmura. By Pidyon, the subject is the animal that is Kadosh. By Tmura, the subject is the animal that is Chulin. And he says that has to do with the person's interaction, reflection, and understanding of what the meaning of Kedusha is. And this goes back to the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. When a person brings a korban, it means that the person has to see this animal as an elevated sense of Kedusha, that it's really the person themselves, or it's in lieu of the person when it's being put on the Mizbeach. It's something that has Kedusha Taguf, something that carries with it a sense of, he calls it, moral obligation of the individual, that the kapara that's going to be brought through this animal, how it affects the person, how the person interacts with such an item. And in doing such, he says the difference in your approach, it makes all the difference. And that is when a person really sees the Kedusha, understands the value of that Kedusha, and then wants to redeem, move that Kedusha onto another item, your reference to the animal with Kedusha is not just like a plain animal. Your references to it is the Kedusha and the holiness and that which is embedded in the potential of that animal. When you focus on that, then you understood or understand what the value of a korban is and what the value of the Kedusha is. And therefore, the right to transfer it is then granted to you through Pidyon, through redemption. On the other hand, when you say, I want Arizu Tachadzu, that you make it that the Chulin animal is now just going to replace the Kedusha on the other animal, what you're trying to do, or what you're basically saying is, I have one animal and another animal. I just don't want that one, I want this one. You're referencing to the item just as animals. And you're just saying it's like a bartering situation. in which you're just moving one animal and exchanging it for another animal. That concept negates the concept of the elevated status of Kedusha in the animal. You're just seeing this as a trade. You're seeing these things as objects, not as something that has elevated Kedusha. And he says that is the fundamental difference between that which is done through Pidyon and that which is done through Tumurah, which is a very important understanding because otherwise they seem very similar in nature. But understanding why you're doing this and your reference to the object of Kedusha is integral to it working versus the case of Tumurah, where it doesn't work because of that exact problem. You don't understand what you have on your hands. You're treating it like a piece of meat, you're treating it like an animal, you're not treating it with the appropriate Kedusha that's embedded in such a korban. All right, that is far as our introduction to Tumurah. The beginning of the Masechta here will be somewhat familiar to us because the same Gemara is found at the beginning of Arachin, because in the beginning of Arachin, the Gemara went through all the Mishnayot and Shas that have the word Akol in them, and they want to know what does Akol come to include. So towards the bottom of our first Amud over here, we will be repeating a Gemara that we saw in the beginning of Arachin, so it'll be very familiar to us. The Mishnah begins, Akol Memirim, Echad Anashim, Ve'echad Nashim. Everybody can create Tumurah, both men and women. The obvious question here is that why do you need to have both men and women mentioned over here? The Gemara will explain, and Tosafot already points it out, is because the Parshia of Tumurah is written in a male conjugation, and therefore we might have thought that women are excluded. The truth is that the whole Torah is written in the male conjugation, so the Gemara will ask that question and say, what was particular about Tumurah that you would have thought a woman would have been excluded from the Parshia of Tumurah? Then the Mishnah continues, Lo she'adam rashai lahamir, not that a person can do Tumurah, Ela she'im hamir mumar, but if he does do it, it is successful. Sofeget ha'arbaim, and he gets 40 malkot for that. He gets malkot for violating the lav. Again, that brings up what we already spoke about, the idea that even though it's a lav she'im b'maisa, and maybe even a lav she'itak b'yaseh, there still are malkot over here. Tosafot raises right away. He says, wait a minute, why isn't it 80 malkot? Here you have lo yamir and lo yachlifenu. You should get 80 malkot, not 40 malkot. He just says that when they say sofeget ha'arbaim, doesn't mean the number of malkot he's going to get. He's using arbaim as a code word for malkot. It's not going down to tell you how many malkot you get. It's just telling you are going to get malkot. The truth is, you might get 80 and not 40 in this instance. That's one way he says it. Or he says it that od yesh lamar do'olam lo laki al arbaim. But maybe the truth is you only get 40 malkot over here. Betray lavet sriche, chad bekarban shelo, chad bekorban shel chaveiro. That the restriction against Tumurah is doing Tumurah on your own korban, and there's also a restriction against Tumurah on a fellow Jew's korban. If a person gives permission, for instance, he says, kol arotzeh lehamir yavovi amir. Anybody wants to do Tumurah, my animal can come do it, and that permission would then make it restricted against you doing it to someone else's animal, not just your own animal. Tosfot has two approaches. One possibility that there really are 80 malkot for it. Another approach that there is 40, and the reason you have two lavin is one for your own animal and one for someone else's animal. So that's far as the malkot are concerned. The other thing you have to see here is if im hamir mumar, that if you do it, you are successful. This will lead us to the machloket abayin rova, which we'll see in the Gemara later on, as to when the Torah says you can't do something, is that mean that you do not have the ability to do it? When the Torah says you may not do such a thing, if you do it, your actions are not efficacious. Or when the Torah says that you can't do something, it means that you can do it, you're just going to be punished for it, you're just going to be penalized for it. And so that will be a machloka that we see later on between Abaye and Rava with regards to that issue. And again, we already mentioned the men and women issue, which is going to come up. Now the Gemara's first question is, Hakufakasha, is that the Mishnah itself seems to be internally inconsistent. There's an internal contradiction or stira in the Mishnah. Amart, a kol me'mirin. Kol me'mirin sounds lechatchila. That sounds like you can do that. A kol me'mirin makes it sound like it's totally fine to do it. Hadratani. And then it says later on in the Mishnah, lo shadam rashai lahamir. I'm going to be skipping the next couple of words like the Shita Mikubetz it says. Not that a person is permitted to do hamara. That sounds like diavad. That's only bidiavad. So how do you make sense out of that? How can it be lechatchila? You can be meimir, and then it says only bidyavad that it works. Vitizbira. Does it make sense? So I'm going to skip the next three words. They take them out of the girsa. Ad kasha lecha mimatnitin. Before you bring this question from the Mishnah, tishalach kra. When you have to bring a question from the Mishnah, you have the psukim themselves, the chtiv. lo yachlifenu velo meir mirato. Which sounds like you're not allowed to do this. So how can you have a Mishnah that says a kol meirin? Kol meirin sounds like everybody can go ahead and do hamara. So how do you have that in the face of a pasuk telling you lo yachlifenu velo yamirato? You have to understand the Mishnah differently. Hakol matpisinet bitmura. It's not telling you that you can do tmura. It's telling you that who has the capacity, who has the ability to do tmura. It's not talking about whether you should or shouldn't do tmura. Just explaining to you who are those empowered to do tmura. And that is echad anashim vechad nashim, both men and women. Lo sha'adam rashay lahamir, not that you have permission to do such. Shim emir mumar, because if you do it, you're going to have tmura on your hands, and you're going to end up with malkot. So in doing such, they speak about the chlatchila part of the Mishnah, not being the Mishnah opining on the permissibility of doing tmura. It's speaking about the capacity and the people that can do the tmura. But then you still have to ask the question, which the Balei Tosafot already raised, which is, why did the Mishnah use such strong language? What is it that a kol meirin? Why do you have to use a language that they call it loshon alima? Why would you use such a strong type of language in order to do such? The first thing he asks is, how do you know that the kol meirin is a loshon of the chatchila? So he says that it might be, if it is bidyavad, then why do you need two bidyavads in the Mishnah? And that the Gemara says in Masechet Chulin, what is it that you have to have two bidyavads in the Mishnah in Chulin? And there, the Gemara goes on to explain why there's a necessity to have there be two bidyavads. But over here, there is no reason to have two bidyavads over here. So therefore, it wouldn't make sense to say that a kol meirin is a lashon of a bidyavad, but rather it must be a lashon of the chatchila. Then he brings Uperish Rabbeinu Shlomo, that Rashi explained that the reason that Chazal did not ask over here why there are two bidyavads is because l'kachlo kasha achatar bidyavad lamali, Mishum dashminam b'seifa shesofeg arba'im. So it's because the seifa is necessary here, Mishum dashminan, that even though it's a lav shein b'masa, that you would have thought ain't lokin alav. So the chiddush in the seifa already is the fact that you get malkot. So it wouldn't be problematic to have two lishonot of bidyavad. And therefore, Tosfot says, according to Rashi's explanation, then why are they so certain over here that the lashon is a lashon of lechatchila? Because Rashi says, I do have a reason for why there's two bidyavads over here, because you need to know that even though it's a lav shvei masa, you get malkot. So Tosfot says it must be that the lashon is mashmakein. That's what it means, or that's the way it sounds, that it's lechatchila. But then he wants to know, Uperish Rabbeinu Tam, that Tanano kol meirin delishna alima lashminan, dafilu b'meizid atmura nitpeset. So they try to answer this question as to why you need the strong language of a kol meirin. So Rabbeinu Tam suggests the reason that you have it is to tell you that even if you do it intentionally, it works. Because you would have thought, if you did it intentionally, you get malkot, and why would it be kasher? You did something wrong, it shouldn't work, and it wouldn't work. Maybe b'shogeg it should work, but b'meizid it won't work. It comes to teach you a kol meirin, it works, no matter what, even if you do it b'meizid. That's his explanation. The Rabbeinu Baruch suggests that the reason it uses the lashon of kol meirin is that tell you that shogeg meizid in malkot, that you get malkot here, not only for meizid, but you also get it for shogeg, which is pretty unusual. We don't ever give out malkot for shogeg. He makes the suggestion that that is the case, that you would also get malkot for shogeg, although the Rashi Mishnah disagrees and says there's no way you can get malkot for shogeg. And the problem is that Girsa in the Gemara on Daf Yud Zayin, the Girsa over there, the Machloket Rishonim over there, as to whether you do get malkot for shogeg here by tmura or not, it has to do with the Girsa in the Gemara over there. And then he finally brings the Ri, says, V'choze lon hira the Ri. All these explanations don't make sense to the Ri. And that's because of the Lashon of our Gemara. Over here, when Rav Yehuda comes to give the answer, he says, why did it add in Nashim and Anashim over there? If he was coming to tell you that Kol Matpisim B'Tmura is important over here, and that's what the focus of the Alima was, he could have just written, then he could have gone on and said, Lo Shadam Rashay Lamir. Why does he bring down the phrase of Echad Anashim V'Echad Nashim? So the Ri says, that's why the Lishna is Alima here, is because of the women. To tell us that you would have thought that there's a Miyut and a Riboy over here. The Riboy tells us that the Tmurat Nashim works, but the Miyut says that they would not go on the Mizbeach. And so a kol memirim is a lishna dalima to crave akamot murat anashim, to tell you that the women's hamara is so successful that even the korban that is garnered from that can be put on the mizbeach. So he says that's why it's achad anashim, achad nashim. The lashon of kol memirim is to teach you how strong the women's tmura is over here. Because again, we're going to see in the Gemara that you would have thought women are turot, or women are not shayachot in tmura. They say that there are different levels of shayachut. You might have thought that a woman was successful creating tmura, but that animal then couldn't be put on the mizbeach. So this comes to tell you, kol memirim, everybody's on an equal plane with the capacity to create tmura, men and women, and the women create the same tmura that the men do. And that's why it's written in a lashon lechatchila or lashon alima. That's the explanation given by the Ri, that he rejects the other reasons of the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rabbeinu Baruch, as to why it is that there is a kol memirim over here. And he explains it based on our Gemara, that adding in the lashon of echad nashim is the focus on why the kol memirim over here is written in such a strong language. Now we go back to Masechet Arachin, hakol latuyei mai. A kol comes to include what? The tuye yoresh, to tell you that even an inheritor of a korban has the right to create tmura, or has the capacity to create tmura. Udelo ki Rabbi Yehuda, that's not like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, we have a bright yoresh somech, yoresh memir, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir believes that an inheritor of a korban has the capacity to do tmura. He also has the right, or has the obligation, to do smicha on the korban. In essence, the question is, how close is the yoresh to the parent that he is replacing? Does the yoresh simply another party who has rights because of his inheritance? Or do we see the yoresh is stepping into the shoes of the parent, and in essence becoming the parent? And if that's the case, then they can come in and do smicha, and they can do hamara, because they're the parent themselves. They are just an extension of the parent. Or do we view them as being another party? And if they're another party, then, like Rabbi Yehuda says, Yoresh enu somech, Yoresh enu memir. Then the Yoresh can't do smicha, and he can't do hamara. We're going to see later on in the Gemara that hamara can only be done by the person who gets kapara from the korban. The assumption would have to be over here that the Yoresh is being the korban, either for his own benefit as a kapara, or for the kapara of his parent. So therefore, it is acting, the korban is acting as a form of kapara, because otherwise, you wouldn't have the right necessarily to do the tmura. And the Gemara explains what the machloket is between them. My time at the Rabbi Yehuda. Yolef tchilat hekdesh misof hekdesh. We learn the beginning of hekdesh from the end of hekdesh. Masom hekdesh. The last thing you do with hekdesh, that is the last thing you do before you do shechita of the animal, is somech. Yoresh enu somech. Just like over there, the yoresh can't do smicha. Av tchilat hekdesh. Something that's all the way at the beginning of hekdesh. Yoresh enu memir. Like haktasha of the animal and hamara. That is, can't be done earlier. And Tosfos Rashi both point out that the Gemara and other places schemes to say that Tchilat Hekdesh and Sof Hekdesh are different, and Tmura is classified as Sof Hekdesh versus over here, which is considered Tchilat Hekdesh. And the answer they both give is context. Depends what you're comparing it to. If you're comparing Tmura to Hakdasha, Tmura is Sof, and Hakdasha is the beginning of Hekdesh. When you're comparing Tmura to Smicha, Smicha is the end of Hekdesh, and Tmura will be the beginning of Hekdesh. But now you're assuming that you know that Smicha can't be done by Yoresh. Just like Smicha can't be done, so too Tmura can't be done. And the Gemara asks the question, Smicha gufa minyalan. How do you know that Smicha can't be done by Yoresh? And the Gemara says, Splat korbano tive. Korbano is written three times by the Korban HaShlamim. Korban HaShlamim involves Bakar, and then by Tzon it's split up into Keves and Eiz. As Rashi says, that the word korbano is written by smicha by all three of those. And the question is, why? Why do you need korbano written by each one of those? The truth is, the Balei Tosafot back on the first daf of Arachin say that it's not the case. Two of the korbanos, which is by bakar and by keves, they are written by the smicha, but by the eiz, it's not written by there. So either he says it's implicit in the korbano that's written by eiz, that it's a reference to the smicha, or he says that the possibility that there are other korbanot throughout Vayikra Aleph Bet that have the word korbanot mentioned there by the smicha, and the possibility is that any one of those could be the drasha here as well. But we have korbanot, which is associated with smicha. That korbanot that's associated with smicha teaches us the following. Chad korbanot plu korban oveit kochavim, to teach you that your korban requires smicha, but not the korban of the non-Jew. Chad Korbano, below Korban Chaveiro. One of them is your Korban, but not your friend's Korban. Chad Korbano, below Korban Aviv. And one of them is your Korban requires smicha, but not the Korban of your father. Or in essence, a Yoresh doesn't do smicha, which is what Rabbi Yehuda wants to show us. Because of this Korban teaches us that by Korban Aviv, it wouldn't be the case. Now, as Rashi points out, the Hava mina would have been that that's different than Chaveiro and Oved Kochavim. Both Oved Kochavim and Chaveiro were third parties. So you would think by them, you can't do smicha. But by the father, because he's maybe not ka'acher dami, but rather it's like him. Again, like the idea that you could step into the shoes of your father. That would have been your havamina. Korbano comes to teach you that's not the case. It's Korbano below Korban Aviv. And that's why it's excluded over here. Now, Balei Tosfot point out over here, Rashi makes the same point here. And back in Arachin, they also make the same point, which is that you don't need Korbano to teach you that an Oved Kochavim doesn't do smicha. That's because it says, Daber el Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael somchim, below Oved Kochavim somchim. We already have a miut from the Pasuk that Oved Kochavim don't do smicha. So then what's the Korbano coming to exclude over here? As Rashi points out, the Balei Tosfot say the same thing, is not to exclude the Oved Kochavim himself from doing smicha, but rather it's coming to tell you that you can't, on behalf of the Oved Kochavim, do smicha. That Korbano, below Shliach, that you can't have some sort of agent come and do the smicha on your behalf, because the Oved Kochavim himself clearly can't do it. So the question is, can then the Kohanim, who are bringing the Korban, or some Yisrael step in and do the smicha on his behalf, because he's precluded from doing it, because it's only Bnei Yisrael that can do it? Do we demand that? And the Korbano comes along to teach you, Korbano, velo shel Oved Kochavim. So now, that's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position. Well, Rabbi Meir, demar Yoresh Somech, v'aktiv Korbano. Wait a minute, Rabbi Meir has the same three Korbanos that are written. Why doesn't he have the same exclusion of Korbano with Korban Aviv? He says, help me baile the rabot, ko bale chuvrim v'smicha. That comes to include all partners in a Korban to doing smicha. So it sounds like the truth is, we'll see from the negative statement what might be the meaning of all of the partners have to do smicha, which is Rabbi Yehuda, bale chuvrim v'smicha, lately. The bale chuvrim sutafim don't need to do smicha. My daima, what's the reason? Dehalo miyached korban didhu. Because no one of them owns the korban. So Rashi over here explains what Rabbi Yehuda's view is that the bale chovrin, sutafim, the korban, don't do smicha at all, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And that's what it means over here. Dehalo miyached korban, since the korban is not designated to one particular individual, none of them do smicha over here. And that's the way the Rashi explains it here. You go back to Arachin and Daf Bet, Rashi explains it differently. And he says, but by the shutafim, any one of the shutafim can do smicha. Since any one of them, and each one of them is an owner of the korban, any one of them on behalf of all of them can do the smicha. So those are the two possibilities. When Rabbi Yehuda says, lately, that he doesn't hold that the shutafim requires smicha, does that mean that he doesn't require them to do smicha, every one of them, but he still requires one of them to do it? Or does that mean they don't do it at all? So Rashi brings both versions down. Now, the truth is that that could then influence what you think that the meaning of Rabbi Meir's position is, that kol balei chovrim l'smicha, that all balei chovrim are included. When you say kol, does kol mean all of them? Or does the kol mean any of them can do it? And it could be. Rashi, in both places, says that they all do it. So it's not muchrach, what I'm saying, but there is a possibility that it might have to do with Rabbi Yehuda's position. If Rabbi Yehuda says they don't have to do smicha at all, then maybe Rabbi Meir's position is that any one of them can do the smicha. If Rabbi Yehuda's position is that one of them has to do it, not all of them, then Rabbi Meir's position is certainly that all of them have to do it. So it's possible that Rabbi Meir's position also, it's a question as to what it means, although Rashi in Arachin and Rashi over here gives a different interpretation as to what Rabbi Yehuda means when he says lately the shutafim. Then the Gemara says, vi bai teima lola mitle. No, he agrees with Rabbi Meir that the bale shutafim have to do smicha. Ve'korban oved kochavim ve'korban chaveiro michat gran afka. Because the problem of oved kochavim and korban chaveiro are the same problem. It's someone else's korban. And therefore you can't perform smicha. Irrespective of whether it's another Jew or a non-Jew, your inability to do smicha is because it's not your korban. So you can exclude both of those from one korbano. That leaves him now an extra korbano. The atalei chad, the balei chuvrin l'smicha. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda's view will be that you exclude from one korbano, chaveiro and oved kochavim. From one korbano, you exclude aviv, yoresh. And the third korbano is to teach you that balei chuvrin, the shutafin, have a requirement to do smicha on the animal, and all likelihood it means that all of them have to do smicha on the animal. Now, the Baalei Tosafot raise here, they raise it back in Arachin as well, which is, why is it that the first two korbanot are used, or korbanot are used for a negative statement, which is a miut? The third one, korbanot, is to include Baalei Chovrin. So Tosafot says, because they excluded everything already. Once you've excluded everything, then you would have known that Baalei Chovrin, Shutafin, would have been excluded automatically. The only reason that you would come along and say korbanot was not to be excluded Shutafin, because Shutafin would be excluded had you said nothing. The fact that the Torah then says korbanot comes to then include shutafim because it was not necessary to exclude them. That would have been your natural tendency to exclude them. And therefore it must be that the reason it's written here is to be inclusive. And that's why they use the last korbanot as an inclusive term. Now Gemara says, V'Rabbi Meir Damar Yoresh Meimir. Now Rabbi Meir, who says that a Yoresh can do tmura, my taima. What's the reason that a Yoresh can do tmura? And the truth is, as the Baalei Tosafot point out, Rabbi Meir just doesn't hold that he can use the same hekesh. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda says that when it comes to smicha, the yoresh is excluded, then the hekesh tells him that tmura, also the yoresh is excluded. Rabbi Meir, who has that the yoresh can do smicha, so through that hekesh, he should also be able to then create it that the tmura should be done. Then why do you need a positive statement from Rabbi Meir as to why he thinks that tmura can be done over here if he has the same hekesh and he believes smicha can be done by a yoresh? And so it says, V'yosh lomar, the im lav kra, damer yamir, which is going to be a source, the merabe yoresh, habalei lukma korbanot fei demute yoresh, merabot kolot balei chovrin. It says, if we didn't have a specific pasuk that included yoresh by tmura, he says that Rabbi Yehuda's explanation is more simple than that of Rabbi Meir's. That is, it would make more sense to exclude a yoresh than it is to include partners. And so therefore, if I had a choice between the two, I would have picked to exclude a yoresh. But now, Rabbi Meir can't do that because of the hekesh, and he believes by tmura, yoresh can't do it because he has a positive statement by tmura that tells you that. And that's Rabbi Meir, damar, yoresh, meimir, my taima, amalacha, im hamer, yamir. The double lashon of hamer, yamir, the rabot, ha yoresh. The additional, as Rashi says, you could have read the pasuk without the second yamir, but it just said, im yamir behema bebehema, hamer yamir lemayato. Why do you have the duplication of the lashon? The rabot at the yoresh, to tell you that yoresh is included. V'yalif, sofek desh, mitchilat hekdesh. And then you'll learn smicha from tchilat hekdesh, from tmura. Ma tchilat hekdesh by tmura, yoresh meimayer, af sofek desh yoresh, someich. And that's why Rabbi Meir believes it, and that's why Tosfot said that Rabbi Meir needs a positive statement to do that. Because otherwise the simpler reading would be like Rabbi Yehuda to say it comes to exclude a yoresh rather than to include Baalei Chovrin like Rabbi Meir says it does. Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, hai im hamer yamir, mai avile. What does he do with the double lashon of hamer yamir? The rabot et aisha, to tell you that a woman is included in tmura. Uched Daniel, because of the braita. Lefish kol ha'inyan kulo enim deber lashon zachar. The entire parshia is written in lashon zachar. Shenemar lo yachlifenu. Velo yamir oto. Isha minayin. How do I know that a woman is included? Tamalomar imhamer yamir the rabot et isha. Come include the woman. Now again, it's strange because the parshia and most of the Torah is written in Lashon Zachar. So why would you have a havamina here to exclude the woman? We'll get to that in a second in the Gemara. Well, Rabbi Meir isha minale. So then Rabbi Meir, how does he include a woman? Nafkale mi ve'im. Ve'im yamir yamir with a vav. That extra vav tells you that an isha is included. Rabbi Yehuda ve'im lo dorish. He doesn't think that's significant, the vav there, and therefore he doesn't bring that as a drasha. Now the Gemara asks, ben the Rabbi Meir, ben the Rabbi Yehuda, taima the Rabbi Kra, the isha. It's only because the woman was specifically included, either because of Hamer Yamir by Rabbi Yehuda, or because of ve'im by Rabbi Meir, that she's included. Halo Rabbi Kra, had the pasuk not included the woman, avamina ki avda tmura lo lakya. That if she did tmura, she wouldn't get malkot. Now Rashi says about that, lo lakya, deim hemira tmurata eina tmura. She does tmura, it doesn't work. You could have read the Gemara when it says that she doesn't get malkot, means that if she does tmura, it works, she just doesn't get malkot for it. But you could have said that it still works. Rashi sees them as inextricably connected, and that if you don't get malkot, means that you can't do tmura. The two are connected. And we may see that later in the Gemara, that there is that connection, that the onesh and the fact that you get malkot is seemingly connected to the capacity to do the tmura or succeed at the tmura. Is that really true that you would have thought that the woman's not included? Don't we have this ish o isha ki asu mikol chatot ha'adam yishva kadub isha le'ish l'cholon shim shibetorah. This is a basic principle that we have, that men and women are on an equal plane, on an equal playing field with regards to all punishments and all negative precepts of the Torah. I mean, it's only by mitzvot asei shazman grama, which are very few in number, where the women have an exemption. Other than that, the women are included, and especially with regards to mitzvot lo taseh, and that's what we just saw here. Ish o yishak yasu mikochotot ha'adam. So, itztrich. No, I need it. Maudutema hanimile onesh deshaveh ben yachidu ben bitzibur. That's only true when there's a punishment that is on the same level between a yachid and a tzibur. V'hacha, teimin de'onesh she'enu shaveh b'kol hu. Since it's not an onesh that applies to everyone, which is that a tzibur cannot create t'mura. It's not. En ha'tzibur v'shutafim osim t'mura. Both a tzibur as a whole and partners don't have the capacity to create t'mura. So isha nami. So to a woman who doesn't do it, who does t'mura, she also would not get malkot. Mashmalan, that she does get malkot. So now in the context here, it's pretty clear here that the inability to do t'mura by the tzibur and the shutafim is their inability to create t'mura. It's not simply they don't get malkot, it's that they can't create t'mura. And they're comparing a woman to that, saying that she doesn't get malkot. That's probably what drove Rashi to say that the two are connected. And the Kamash Malan is that the woman does get Malkot, and she does have the capacity to create Tmura. The only little problem with that is that the Rambam himself says that if a Tzibur tries to create Tmura, they're unsuccessful at it, but you would get Malkot for it because you tried to do it, and even though you're unsuccessful at it, the fact that you tried already is enough to get you Malkot. That would undermine this a little bit. This is what we're saying in Rashi. But again, you could see separating out the issue of Malkot from Tmura. Nevertheless, the Havamid of the Gemara here is that a woman would have been excluded from the parsha of Tmura because there are already other exemptions from Tmura. It's already a mitzvah that's not applicable to everyone, so maybe an isha would not be included. Rashi brings that there was an alternate girsa in the Gemara, and the alternate girsa actually makes a little bit of sense over here because of the pasuk that we quoted. The pasuk that we quoted for kolon shinshi b'torah ish v'ishar shaveh is ki asu mikochatot adam. When they do any of the restrictions that you're not allowed. And what Rashi points out is that yaseh means a lav sheyesh bo maiseh. So you would have thought that only a lav sheyesh bo maiseh are men and women equal with regards to these matters. And since t'mura is one of these items that is a lav sheyesh bo maiseh, then maybe they would not be included in this restriction because b'dibur ba'alma, it's only through a vocalization or a verbal violation that you do this, there is no mice over here. And the Kamash Malon is that the Isha is included, despite the fact that it's a lab she'ein bo maaseh. And then Rashi brings the Lishna Achrina, Ketuv B'Sfarim, and he brings the Lashon that we have over here. Again, the problem with the first explanation is then you would have to have that for every time there's a lab she'ein bo maaseh in the Torah. You'd have to have a specific riboy for women, if that was the case, or that was the explanation over here, which we don't necessarily have. I think that might be why they favor the second explanation, which is it's a lav she'enu shaveh b'kol. And since that's the case, maybe you would exclude a woman from it, kamash balan, that we do include the woman over here. So, bai Rami bar Chama, katan ma'ushi amir. Does a katan, an underage individual, have the ability to create t'mura? And the Gemara wants to understand, echidami, who are we speaking about in this underage individual? Evelei ma b'katan shelo gi'a le'chunat nidarim. If you're speaking about a child that has not reached the point where his nether has meaning, loti bailach, then what's the question? Came into akdushe lo akdish, since he can't create kedusha, meaning that he can't be makdish an animal, amure meimir, how could he then create tmura? Tmura is just a subcategory of hakdasha, and therefore if he can't do the ikar hakdasha, then he certainly can't do the hamara. Ela ki kabaile, bekatan shigialo nat nidarim. The question is, with a katan, he's reached the point where his nidarim are nitpas, even though he has not yet reached the age of bar mitzvah or for a girl bat mitzvah. Mi amrina came into amar ish. By nidarim it says ish. Matomal amar ki yafli neder. What does that mean? Ki yafli means to express, to verbalize a neder and make it clear. So the rabot mufla hasamukh ish. That comes to include not only an ish, but someone who is a mufla hasamukh ish. Mufla means someone who understands and can articulate that which they are doing. The kadosh, kadosh. That when he makes something kadosh, it works. So me akdushe makdish, and murei nami memir. since he has the capacity to create Kedusha and Hekdesh, he also has the capacity to do Tmura. Or in essence, Neder, or Hakdasha, is a form of Neder. And since he can do Hakdasha, he also can do a Neder. And since he can do Hakdasha, he can do the subcategory of Hakdasha, which is Hamara. Odilma came into Lav Bar Onchinu, bit Tmura, lo Mitpis. Or maybe since he's not punishable by Tmura, it does not take effect. This might go back to what we saw in Rashi before, that the punishment and the Tmura are inexplicably connected to the point where if you're not a Bar Onchin, you're not someone who can be punished or penalized, then you can't do Tmura, or Tmura is not relevant to you. Here it might be because the person's underage, so it may not be the same as a woman, but this also could be along those lines of what Rashi is saying. But nevertheless, what we're suggesting here is since he's not a Bar Onchin, and he won't get Malkot for it, and he can't be in violation of Lavin, he can create positive things like Hakdasha, but he can't do his negative things like the restriction against Hamara, and so maybe he's not included. And then the Gemara says, Im Tim Salomar, if you want to say Katana Vid Tmura, that he has the ability to create Tmura, da Ati Lechlal Onshin. Because at some point he's going to reach the point of Onshin, and therefore his actions now are efficacious as well, even with regards to Tmura. Rashi over here makes an interesting comment. He says, Rebuta Ati Leishmina, Velo Mishum Deite Hachi. The Gemara says, Im Tim Salomar over here, it's not saying that that's the halacha, it's just saying he wants to teach us another Chiddush. Rashi is here referencing something that the Rambam does, which is the Rambam, every time the Gemara says Im Tim Salomar, it means the Gemara concluded. And this is the way the Gemara believes the answer should be, and now it's moving on to the next question. The Rashi over here is saying, don't think that. Don't think that the Im Tim Salomar means the Gemara concluded anything. The Gemara is just speculating here, and saying, well, if you want to do this, let me bring you another Chiddush that you could learn from this, which is, Ovei Kochavim, Ma'ushi Amir. And Ovei Kochavim, does he have the capacity to do Tmura? Mi Amart Midak Dushe Maktish? A Ovei Kochavim can be Maktish. The Tanya, Ish, Ish. The pasuk has the duplication of the word Ish. Matamad Omar. Ish, Ish, the Rabot at Ovei Kochavim. Comes to teach you that even non-Jews should know Dream Nidarim v'Nidavot Ki Israel. That they can bring Nidarim and Nidavot just like any other person in Israel. And Mure, Nami Memir. So since they can be Maktish, then they can do Hamara, which is just a subcategory of Hakdasha. Well, Dilma came to Lati Lechlal Onshin. Or maybe because they never are under the rubric of the punishment, meaning they don't get Malkot, they don't are in violation of Allah forever. Even the Katan wasn't in violation when he was then, but he will eventually be a Bar Onshin. But here, the Ovei Kochavim will never be a Bar Onshin. So maybe since he'll never be a Bar Onshin, Ki Avi Tmura Lo Kodesha, so then when he does Tmura, it's not effective. That's our question with regards to a non-Jew, with regards to an Ovei Kochavim. Now the Gemara is going to try to figure this out. I'm a robot, Tashma. Let's look at this, the Tanya. Kodshei Ovdei Kochavim. When it comes to the Kodoshim and Ovei Kochavim, lo nehenin velo moalin. You cannot get hana from them, but there is no din of mi'ilah. But in essence means that this is mi'ilah midrabanan, not mi'ilah de'oraita. Ve'ein chayvenin aleha mishum pigol notar vitameh. And you also don't have all the normal restrictions that are associated with the korban of pigol notar vitameh. Ein osim tmura. You can't create tmura. Ve'ein mevi'en nisachin, and you don't bring nisachim. Now, as Rashi notes over here, nisachim, or not bringing nisachim, doesn't mean you don't bring nisachim with their korban. It means that they can't bring nisachim independently. They can't be makdish, or they can't donate nisachim independent of a korban. Their korban does require nisachim, and that's one of the tanai beitin, which is that if he sends a nisachim with it, we are makrivit. If he doesn't send nisachim with the animal, then it comes from the tzibur, and they do the nisachim for the goy. Aval korbanot ta'un nisachim divrei Rabbi Shimon. That's what we just said now, that his korban does require nisachim. That's Rabbi Shimon's view. Amar Rabbi Yossi b'kulan ani ru'eh l'achmir. I think that all of those should be the chumra, which means I think all of these items are not true, which is means not lo ne'im v'lo mo'alim, but rather lo ne'im u'mo'alim. There's real me'ilah. Chayivin aleim mishum pigo notar v'tamei osim t'mura b'medarim murim b'kodshei mizbeach. That's only true by kodshei mizbeach. Aval but when it comes to Kodshei Bedek HaBayit, you can't be Moel in them. Rashi claims that this last statement of Bamed Davurim Murim, going back to Rabbi Shimon's statement earlier in the Beraita, which is that he says, when do I say all this is true? That's by Kodshei Mizbeach. By Kodshei Bedek HaBayit, there is Mi'ilah associated with it. That's why Rashi reads it. The Bali Tosafot bring from the Re that this last statement is the end of Rabbi Yossi's statement. Achiyamar, Rabbi Yossi Omer B'kulana Yoel Achmir, he says, even Rabbi Shimon will agree with me when it comes to Kodshei Bedek HaBayit, Although Tosafot says that the Tosefta sounds like Rashi, that this is Rabbi Shimon's statement, not the statement of Rabbi Yossi. Tani miha, enosim tmura. It says over there in this Braita that they can't create tmura. Now the truth is, you could just say his questions according to Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi says there is tmura over here. The Tosafot brings two possibilities. One is that he wants to explain the question even according to Rabbi Shimon, or he said, oh, yeshlamar, do kochachach Rabbi Yossi, lo efshalukume habayo. It's impossible to say the question is according to Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi clearly believes that the Ovid Kochavim can do Tmura. And then if you say maybe that's only in a case when it was done on Yedei Yisrael that was doing it, still you'd have the same problem, is because you can't say that it's Yisrael that's doing the Tmura on behalf of the Ovid Kochavim, because then the Ovid Kochavim needs to make the Yisrael into a Shliach. And if you can't do it yourself, you can't make someone else into a Shliach to do it. Therefore, it wouldn't make sense that Rabbi Bar Chama's questions according to Rabbi Yossi. And that's why the Gemara is forced to say that it's according to Rabbi Shimon and not according to Rabbi Yossi, this question of Rabbi Bar Chama. Rabbi Bar Chama, who asked the question originally as to whether an Ovid Kochavim can create Tmura, he doesn't think Rava's proof over here is a good proof, because Baptish Ovid Kochavim Nitkaber Ovid Kochavim Lo Kami Bailet. If the Ovid Kochavim was Makdish the animal, in order for another Ovid Kochavim to get Kapara, or for he himself to get Kapara from it, there I don't have a question that there is no Tmura. Kiman Bibayle, my question is, Makdish Ovid Kochavim, Umit Kaper Yisrael. The Ovid Kochavim was Makdish the animal on behalf of a Jew, to give it to a Jew to use for his Kapara. A Jew requires some sort of Korban to be brought. The Ovid Kochavim basically pays for it, or donates that animal, is Makdish the animal on behalf of this Jew. And the Jew's going to bring it in order to attain the kapara. That's where I have a question. Bater makdish azlinen, or bater mitkaper azlinen? Do we go after the makdish, who's no Ovid Kochavim, and therefore there's no tmura? Or do we go after the person who's gaining kapara over here? He is in Israel, and therefore it should be tmura. So tifshot lemi to Rabbi Abo. Well, that question we can answer from Rabbi Abo's statement. Amar Rabbi Abo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, hamakdish, mosif, chomesh. The person who is the one who was makdishit, he's the one who adds on the additional chomesh, if he redeems it. Umit kaper oset tmura. The one who attains kapara is the one who does tmura. In instances where the person who's makdish is different than the mit kaper is the one given the right of tmura. Vatorim mishalo ashal chaveiro. Someone who takes off truma on behalf of his friend's tevel, he does that without his friend's necessarily acquiescence, but he's doing this to help out his friend, and he takes off from his own produce in order to take care of the tevel of his friend, he has the right to distribute this tmura to whomever he chooses. He gets to pick the kohen that he gives it to, because he's the one whose money or possessions were the thing that created the tmura. So you see here pretty clearly that it has to do with the mitkaper. Whoever is the mitkaper is the one who determines whether it's tmura. So here where the Ovid Kochavim was Makdisha, but the mitkaper is Yisrael, there clearly should be tmura. That's because there, the animal was coming from Koach Yisrael. Shumachi azlina bata mitkaper. If you ask me, if you have two Israelim, one who was makdish and one who's being mitkaper, I'll tell you that the Israel who's mitkaper has the right of tmura. So v'havilei tchilato v'sofo biyad Yisrael. That's because it's in Jewish hands from beginning to end. V'hocha hocha kami baile. That's the question here. Mi bina mitzchila v'atsof, the teku birshut, man the ovid tmura. Do you need it to be in the possession of someone who has the capacity to make tmura, in order for it to have the capacity to make tmura, meaning it has to be Jewish owned from the time of Akdasha all the way to Kapara, in order for it to be the possibility of tmura. Then he asks me, who has the right to do tmura? That's mitkaper. But you still have to have it in the hands of Yisrael all the way through. Or does it not matter? Meaning it's not in a goy's hand originally, but the mitkaper is Yisrael. That's enough to allow you to do tmura. Teiku, the Gemara leaves that as an unresolved issue. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph.